Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Natto. Saturdays at the Spa is brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Good morning and welcome to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you on Four Star Dave weekend here in Saratoga. And as my partner Anthony Mormino and I on the Handicappers Report alluded to, it wouldn't be Four Star Dave weekend if it didn't have some crazy rain. And once again, out of the blue, we did get some crazy rain this morning. So just take note if you're looking over this card. We are off the turf early, 1, 3, 5, and 7, I believe. And then on the turf, of course, for the Four Star Dave. And then the finale, too. So we've got a fun show to go with today, and we're going to start in a second with David Aragona, morning line maker for NYRA, New York Racing Association, and as well does work for Timeform US, and then off. And we've got about 15 minutes with Chad Brown yesterday that we taped at his barn, and Chad's got four in the Four Star Dave today, and then a couple in the Diana tomorrow. You know, we've got tomorrow my sister Charlie going for her third straight Diana, which would be a record and a heck of accomplishment, and then Rushing Fall as well, who, you know, maybe doesn't get the just due as kind of, you know, she's in the barn with champions Uni and Sister Charlie, but five-time grade one winner that might be in the Hall of Fame someday. So it's a phenomenal running of the Diana tomorrow. And then to wrap up the show, speaking of the Diana, I'm going to have Kevin Attard on with Starship Jubilee, who they claimed for $16,000 back in the day and has now won over $2 million and hits hard, beat Sister Charlie in the Boston Spa. So it's a great race tomorrow, front and center today, four-star day. But we'll start the program. We'll bring in my first guest, David Aragona from NYRA, New York Racing Association, morning line maker. David, welcome again to Saturdays at the Spa. You are not in Saratoga, correct? So you're back home doing the social distancing this summer?
On the show. I'm down in New York City still, so doing all the work remotely this year.
Yeah, and you follow you on Twitter a lot, and I can see in your office there, whatever, you've got a couple pictures, but you're always a good follow on Twitter, not only for your racing acumen, but I know the maybe the basement has a lot of artifacts in it. I see you like to post that every now and again. It reminds me of probably my parents' basement as well.
Yeah, I got the chance to stay with my dad, who lives in Pennsylvania, for a few months during quarantine, and he's got just this treasure trove of artifacts going all the way back to the 70s. He started going to the races when those great horses, Secretary and Seattle Slew of Burn, were running. So I just kind of dug through his collection of old programs of racing for him and posted some stuff on Twitter. Just really cool to relive some of that racing history.
There was a point in time when my parents' basement had every racing form I ever bought. And I bought a lot of racing form. So I know where you were going there. And it's cool. It is cool to sift through the old ones and to see, like, especially, you know, when horses actually ran and they ran fast and they ran consistently, and just to like thumb through those PPs and see them all.
No, it's really harkens back to another time when horses ran way more frequently, and just to see some of those old horses' past performances, it's really mind-blowing compared to how often horses run today.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. So as I mentioned at the start, morning line maker for NYRA, and I wanted to have you on for a couple reasons, but I wanted to get you talking about the construction of the morning line, because I do think you and I definitely agree that it is still very vital in racing. And I don't think people really maybe understand it, for that matter, or they don't really think it has an importance. And maybe before we get into the nuts and bolts of how you go about doing it, just kind of give people, you know, what it is and why it is relevant in this era, maybe especially up here at Saratoga, too.
Well, the morning line is just a place for you to start when you're handicapping, and it's not for everybody. Some handicappers really feel they don't need to look at a morning line, and that's fine. But what the morning line basically is, it's a projection of what someone, or me in this case, thinks that the odds are going to be when horses leave the gate. And my one goal is to try to get the morning line to be as close as what the final odds are going to be, so that when you're handicapping the race, you have some idea of where the odds are going to end up. And if I do my job correctly, you're not going to land on a horse that you thought was 12-1 that's actually going off at 6-1 because I pegged that horse correctly on the morning line.
Right. And as David said, it's one guy's opinion or girl's opinion, and in this case, it's his. And his job is not to necessarily predict who's going to win or necessarily who he thinks is going to win or who he thinks is necessarily going to be the favorite. It's who you, David, think the public is actually going to gravitate to. And I think that might be the one thing that maybe gets lost a little bit on the public.
Yeah, I mean, a win for me is when the morning line odds really just completely mirror the final odds. So I try to figure out what scenarios the public bets certain horses in, whether a certain trainer does well first off the claim, if a certain rider is hot right now. And I try to incorporate all of that into the morning line and just kind of try to stay ahead of where the public is going in all these races.
Yeah, and it's difficult up here, especially with so many wise guys and horses that are well meant, and, you know, maybe horses that you didn't think or the public didn't think would be live. And then, you know, maybe you make someone at 12 and they open up at 4-1, the barn new angle. So it's got to be tough for you to navigate through it with all the first time starters and all the connections that are well meant up here, especially in the 2-year-old races.
Yeah, I mean, the difficult thing about Saratoga is that there are so many more factors to consider than you would usually encounter at Aqueduct or Belmont. As you said, you've got the 2-year-old races where workouts are so important, and if you have access to workout reports, a lot of handicappers and bettors put a lot of stock in those. Connections, if they're having a big year like Steve Asmussen is, it seems like all of his 2-year-olds are getting bet and they've been running, so it's been justified. And even in the other races, some of the claiming races, you've got at a typical Saratoga meet, you've got horses shipping in from other circuits, so you have to know how those barns are typically bet in New York. Just a lot of factors to consider, and that's one of the fun things about Saratoga.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about the actual construction of a morning line. And I think even as handicappers, you know, I've done it for years now, just with my work with Horse Player Now and making fair odds lines and things like that. And I think it's a smart thing to do as a handicapper, especially because then, you know, you can compare it to David's line or you compare it or your line, meaning the person's line, to the betting public. And it gets you, you know, if you think Casa Creed should be 8-1 and he's 30-1 when the betting for the 4-star Dave comes about, you know, then you know where to lean and you have a horse pegged a lot lower than the public. So, David, talk about how you go about the actual construction of a morning line. I would think, you know, you're in the 126 range or so. So just let people know what, when I say that 126 points, what exactly that means and how you get about to that number or around it.
Yeah, so I mean, essentially, just to kind of make it simple, the way the morning line works is you have to get all of the odds to add up to a number minus what the takeout is at the racetrack. So the takeout in the win pool at Meyer, I believe, is 16%. So you would do just a little bit of quick math to make all of the points, and every set of odds that you set a horse at corresponds to a certain number of points. So obviously, if a horse is odds on, that's going to take up more than half of the points in a race. So you want that all to add up to a number with the takeout, which usually ends up to be somewhere around 126 to 128 points. I typically shoot for somewhere in that range. And if you do that, then you at least have a chance of having your morning line mirror the final odds, because that's how the final odds are going to add up as well. Then the other difficult part, the more difficult part, is just actually pegging all the horses at the odds that they should be. And in terms of that, I just really try to pay a lot of attention to how people bet the races. And half of my job, I think, is just paying attention to how the races are bet every single day and making little mental notes about when the public latches onto one horse or stays off another, when a certain barn is hot or cold. And I try to incorporate all those factors into the morning line.
Brian, back in the booth, if we can put up that graphic, because I did have them put the graphic together. Here they are here. We're seeing the points for each horse. So as David mentioned, if you tab a horse at 3-1, that's 25 points. He's got a, you know, 25 points, a 3-1 is, he's got a 25% chance. And that's, you see the points, 3-2 is 40 points, and so on and so forth. And David, I won't name names, but David makes a very good morning line. And the reason he makes a very good morning line is because he adheres to that 126, 127, 128. And Again, I'm not going to name names. It drives me crazy when I tab up these morning lines at some other tracks, David, and I see 137, 138, and things like that. Because as you mentioned, in order to be accurate, you have to stick within that range. And if you're throwing out 137, 138, it's just not going to be an accurate assessment of what the odds are going to be when you factor in the takeout.
Yeah, and sometimes it does require a lot of massaging on my part to get it done under that 130 mark, especially when you've got a large field, because you've got to set even the long shots at some sort of threshold, whether it's 30-1 or 50-1, and that's going to take up some number of points. So in those situations, I just kind of try to get the proportions right. Maybe the favorite ends up going off a little bit lower than I had him, but that's just a sacrifice you have to make, as long as you've got the horses in the right proportions.
Yeah.
I'm doing a pretty good job.
And that's really, you know, he used the word massage, and that really is making a morning line or making a true fair betting line. It is. And that's really what it is. You're trying to get things in proportion and you know, you've got to massage the numbers a little bit, and you can see it here. Just going from even money to 4 to 5 is basically a 5 to 6 point difference. And, you know, it can make everything out of whack. So I think, you know, if you're watching this show, first and foremost, if you watch us in the morning, you know, you're a pretty serious player, and I would really advocate, you know, making as a handicapper your own fair betting line, and that's where it would differ with what David's doing. But in theory, it is still the same thing. You want to be within that realm because it's, again, like I mentioned, you know, I threw Casa Creed's name out there randomly. But if you assign X horse at 2 to 1 and he's 4 to 1, then you know that's a great betting opportunity for you personally, because you have that horse and he's a big overlay. And that's, you know, that's the name of this game, fair odds on horses. So I wanted to have David on to talk a little bit about that. David, I also wanted to have you on, you know, because talk a little bit about what you're doing. You're not just a morning line maker. You're obviously with the time form and things like that, exactly what you guys do. And then also how it turns into the pace of racing, which can be maddening for guys like us trying to handicap these races. You know, you see these races where it looks like there's 3 or 4 speeds, and then one guy goes, and the race is totally thrown out of whack. You guys have a pretty good handle on that, at least going in.
Yeah, so the other half of my job is that I'm an analyst at the Daily Racing Forum with a focus on our Timeform USPP's product. And if you haven't checked it out, it's a really intuitive set of past performances, a lot of color-coded stuff, data that's made that's easy to digest. One of those components is the pace projector, which you were alluding to. And we incorporate the early pace ratings and pace figures for all of the horses in each race, and basically try to come up with a projection of how the horses are going to be arranged a half a mile into every race. And that can be really useful, because sometimes you might look at a race and there'll be a bunch of different speed horses, and it'll be difficult to figure out which horse is faster than another because different tracks are playing faster than others. You can't just compare the raw fractions to each other. And if you pay attention to the Timeform US pace projector, especially in dirt sprints where riders typically are trying to go as fast as they can in the early going of those races, so the pace figures are pretty useful, it gives you a really good sense of which horses are going to make the lead and how fast they're going to be going.
Yeah, and I think, would you agree, David, that over the past, you know, several years, I think pace figures in that aspect of handicapping has really come to the forefront a little bit and taken on a lot of added importance as players are finding out that obviously pace makes the race, but it's so vital now in handicapping.
Yeah, I feel like the data is becoming way more prevalent. Even if you have the regular Daily Racing Form PPs now, you'll see that the early and late pace ratings from Timeform US are printed in there. And the early pace ratings are the major component of what fuels the pace projector. So if you're just looking at the regular Daily Racing Form PPs, you can get some sense of how the pace projector is going to have those horses stack up. And yeah, the data is available. And I think people have noticed that it's pretty useful and it's right a lot of the time. So people have been paying a little more attention to pace projections, and I think that's a good thing.
And I know you had a big day. Was it last week? I saw you tweet that the ROI was pretty healthy. How's the meet been going in general for you, which can often be a little tricky up here at Saratoga?
Yeah, it's been going pretty well overall. I mean, I had a pretty nice day on Sunday. Had a few long shot winners that day. I mean, Saratoga is always full of ups and downs, and as long as you can get a few long shots home, even just one a week, that can make a good meet for you. So things have been going pretty well so far. We'll see if we can keep it going for the last 3 weeks of the meet.
Yeah, we've still plenty of time left. It's definitely, it's no longer a sprint. It's a marathon up here. David, thanks for taking the time this morning. David Aragon, a morning line maker at NYRA, as well as DRF and Timeform US. Thanks so much for taking the time, and be safe, be healthy, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. David Aragona there with Morning Line Maker. And like I said, I feel like it's something that gets overlooked. And I know a lot of people don't think much of it or don't have a lot of use for it. I firmly believe, and David's with me, my good friend Joe Christofek, who did for years the Morning Line at Arlington Park. You know, I really feel like it does have a spot in racing. And you know, just to talk a little bit, you know, the Morning Line at Gulfstream is terrible. It's a laughable product, but it's relevant because, you know, they have the Rainbow Six and things like that. And just to case in point, when you make a bad morning line and you see players that, you know, a day when they're paying the Rainbow Six out, and a lot of players just want the action. So they say, you know, I'll look through the PPs and I'll take two or three horses in each race. Oh, this horse is 20-1. I'm not going to pick him. And then the horse goes off at 4-1. That's why a good morning line is relevant. And that's why a bad morning line is just bad business, quite frankly. And so if you're making your own morning line, if you're doing it yourself, or you're following along somebody like David Aragona who makes a good morning line, that's why it's important. And if you do it yourself, a fair betting line, that's where you can get advantages in this game, because you look through stuff like that and you say, oh, the two horse in race two is 15-1 on the morning line. Well, I know he's going to be 4-1, and so I need to use him. And a lot of people might casually thumb through the past performances and not pick up on that. So, you know, I think it is very important. I think it's lost in today's racing, but I do still think it's vital. So I'm glad David could take the time, come on, talk a little bit about the construction of it. Brian, back in the truck, put up that graph. And, you know, you could just do a Google search and you'll find those points. And that's how you construct it. Like David said, you've got to massage those numbers to get within about 126, 128 points. And that's going to give you so you assign those numbers to your horses, and then you can find a fair betting line. I think a fair betting line in this game is very, very important, because again, and thanks Bri for putting that up, there it is again. So you do that morning line, fair betting line for yourself, and again, you see if you have race one, the five horse at 6-1, and he's 2-1, well, you want to go a different way, because that's a major underlay. That's not fair value. Conversely, if you have him at 2-1 and he's going off at 6-1, that's a big overlay, and that's something you want to get involved with. So you know, fool around with it, try it. It's not for everybody, but if you're a serious player, making a fair betting line is not the worst thing you can do. That's for sure. So hopefully we kind of steered you in the right direction there and how to construct it. So David, that was great to have him on. It will bring us to our first break here on Saturdays at the Spa. When we come back, yesterday, Friday, I got about 15 minutes with Chad Brown. At his barn, masks on. So we'll play that when we come back. Chad's got four today in the four-star Dave, and he's got the two big gals in the Diana, Sister Charlie, and Rushing Fall. So when we come back, Chad Brown, stay tuned.
No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Birdstone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone.
Good morning and welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you on Four Star Dave Day. And as I alluded to at the top of the program, and Anthony Mormino and I did so on the Handicappers Report, Four Star Dave Day means it has to rain in Saratoga, like holy heck, and that's what it did this morning. So we're off the turf in races 1, 3, 5, and 7. Take note of that. But of course, we are on the turf for the Four Star Dave and Chad Brown, the meet's leading trainer, and he's odds on to get another title for sure. He's just got so many good horses in the numbers. Todd Pletcher and Mike Maker and Christoph Clement are giving him a battle, but I think Chad started to assert himself a little bit. Chad's got 4 in the Four Star Dave today, and then in tomorrow's Diana, Grade 1 Diana, he's got 2 big ones, Sister Charlie and Rushing Fall. Sister Charlie going for her 3rd straight in the Diana, which would be a record. It would be unprecedented. It would be really impressive. So I was able to catch up with Chad yesterday outside his barn on a busy Friday. So many thanks to him for taking the time, because no one's busier at Saratoga in the summer at Saratoga than Chad Brown on the eve of a Grade 1 weekend. So many thanks to him. So we're going to play that now. He was talking very candid, very good interview. I thought he was very good. Talking just about all 4 horses today, the 2 tomorrow, Saratoga in general, winning the trainer's title and things like that. So here's Chad Brown yesterday, Friday, outside his barn, previewing the weekend stakes.
Chad Brown here on a big Grade 1 Saturday at Saratoga. We've got the 4-star Dave as well as the Diana on Sunday. And Chad must be looking forward to it. 2 Grade 1 turf stakes.
Yeah, you know, we got a lot of horses entered this weekend. And like you said, those 2 Grade 1s are at the top of the list. We're really looking forward to it.
4 of them in the 4-star Dave on Saturday. 3 of them especially. Uni Without Parole and then Raging Bull. Similar running styles. You look at this race on paper. Not a lot of speed in there. How do you see it at least shaping out for that trio?
Yeah, the pace is always concerning in races like that. And like you said, on paper, you know, a little worried about that. Hopefully there's enough pace develops and they'll be able to get, you know, a setup that'll suit them.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk Uni first, champion last year. I would think, I don't want to use the word short, but a comeback she needed at Belmont. And then, of course, newspaper record got loose. Slow fraction. So how did you assess her, Uni's performance in her first start back?
Yeah, I do think she was short. I think that's fair. She has missed some training going into that race. I think she's only about 80% ready. And I think exiting the race, she got a lot out of it. You know, the turf was a little soft that day anyway. And, you know, I see her tighter and fitter now.
And you mentioned, I know going in, you were hoping for firm turf. It looks like that's going to be the case. Helps all your horses?
Yeah, I do. I think this group here, they all look like they prefer firm ground, so hopefully the weather holds.
And we're going to show footage of the Breeders' Cup Mile last year where she kind of cemented her championship.
Cheers. The half was 45.32. Around the far turn, Hagamon, the leader by just a head. El Tormenta draws up alongside, and the pack is closing in. And Got Stormy and Uli are moving together 4 and 5 wide as they come to the top of the stretch. And Circus Maximus is right in behind them. A cavalry charge into the final furlong. Got Stormy and Uni, the 2 girls take over as they come to the final 16th. Uni to the front. Got Stormy back in the second. Without Parole takes 3rd late. Behind Uni in the mile. Uni did it by 2.5 over Got Stormy.
And very firm turf at Santa Anita. Big run that day. Talk a little bit about that, going and taking on Colts, obviously, and running down Got Stormy, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a remarkable race she ran, the best of her life. And, you know, she looked like she was coming into it the right way. And, you know, I applaud the owner for bringing her back at 6. It's a hard thing to do, especially for a filly. There's a lot of money on the table there to sell her as a broodmare. And, you know, they're real sportsmen. They love seeing a race, and we're very fortunate to have her. And, you know, although her season got started later than we would have liked, she does seem to be in fine form now. Her final workout that she just had here this week was the best I've seen all year.
And then Raging Bull and Without Parole coming out of they ran in the Shoemaker.
They're approaching the quarter pole. Neptune Storm takes over from Voodoo Song, Riverboyne, War of Will, Raging Bull circling up in the green on the far outside. Without Parole is waiting for some racing room. They're at the top of the stretch. Here comes Raging Bull. bearing down in the center of the course, and he's up to battle for the lead with Riverboy. War of Will comes through behind them without parole, nowhere to go, and Raging Bull is in complete command, and he will stroll in the Shoemaker Mile, wrapped up by Joel Rosario. Next Shares ran an amazing race, and without parole, got out late to get the show dough.
One had a lot of trouble. The other got the clear trip. Crazy pace that day.
Yeah.
Without parole, I mean, are you waiting still for his best race? I know they both, I don't want to say regress, but the pace wasn't as hot in the Maker's Mark, and they didn't both close. Are you still trying to get to find out what he's got in the tank?
Yeah, I think that, you know, like you said, it was a hot pace last time. The tail of two trips without parole was stuffed inside. I think it would have been a much closer race had he had been a clear run. But Raging Bull, you know, he's a very consistent horse, and he stormed down the center of the track, and it's hard to imagine if someone was going to outrun him that day. You know, if he gets a decent setup, I don't think he can get the same pace at all in this race. But if it's just a fair pace and he lays a little closer, I think he's got a good shot. And Without Parole needs to get better position out of the gate. I think that's the key with that horse. He's finding himself, his last couple races, too far off the pace, and I think it's a horse that wants to be closer.
What about the tighter turns of the inner? Is that a concern? Obviously, like we've talked about, those three horses want to come from behind. Any concerns there?
Yeah, you know, it's a very tricky turf course, and you know, you have to get position on these turns because they are tight, like you said. So I'm hoping the horses, you know, all my horses, when they turn for home, they're in some sort of position to give them a clear run, and none of them are too far away.
Valid point, should be closer in theory. Big step up for him. Maybe he needed his comeback too, but he is a Grade 1 winner. I know he's facing older tomorrow. Talk about him, his development, and he's got to answer the bell tomorrow, I would think.
He really does. I know we were on the fence about when to run him, but I'll tell you, he's training really well. Didn't see any other options that suit him. He likes firm ground, and like you said, I think he'll be a lot closer tomorrow. You know, he's a horse's last race. I would just throw it out. He was inside. He just really resented being in there, according to Javier. So hopefully he gets a clear run this time.
Shifting over to Sunday, the Diana. You've won it 4 years in a row, five overall. And Sister Charlie would be going for three in a row before we get into each horse. What kind of accomplishment would that be? I mean, that's heady stuff.
Well, it is. I mean, for, you know, such a prestigious race, and no filly's done it before. But then again, there's a reason why they haven't. It's so hard to do. So, you know, she'll have her work cut out for her. She's a great horse, and she's training really well. She's another one that was a bit short in her last race. I think she really needed the race, and she came out of it strong. Her two works since have been really good. So I'm looking forward to running her.
But the distance was probably a little short last time as well, a mile and a 16th in the Boston Spa. You get back to a more comfortable nine.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's definitely short for her, and that layoff kind of bit her the last 16th of a mile. So I think she's set up for a big forward move.
You mentioned with Uni, the sportsman, Mike Dubb, and those connections, Peter Brand, I would think, is at the top of that list. Bringing her back, a champion at 6 years old, a Breeders' Cup winner, what more can she have to accomplish? But here she is at six.
Yeah, I think he did a great thing. I mean, he loves seeing her run, and I think it's a great thing for horse racing. These horses, you know, run a little longer.
Yeah.
And, you know, gave her all the time. She's another one like Uni. Her season got started later than we had hoped for a few different reasons. But here we are in late summer, and I think she's set up for a good second half of the season.
Switch over to Rushing Fall, who, I mean, I thought in defeat in this race last year might have run arguably her best race and probably got a lot of respect from people who maybe thought she couldn't get that far, or maybe she wasn't that top class. We'll show last year's Diana with Sister Charlie in Rushing Fall. Rushing Fall making first run into a very hot pace.
Rushing Fall and Sister Charlie third and fourth just ahead of Secret Message. Oh, Mary still trailing the field, but now she's only eight lengths behind Thais, who's gone three quarters in 111.51 seconds and rounds the far turn with a three-length lead. Rushing Fall and Sister Charlie are moving together outside of Mitchell Road. Oh, Marique is going to come wide. Secret Message is going to cut the corner. They're into the stretch. Rushing Fall gets first run. Sister Charlie comes after her. They're 1-2. Oh, Marique is finishing in the center of the course. It's Sister Charlie, Rushing Fall, and Oh, Marique. The Chad Brown runners, 1-2-3, coming down to the line, and it's going to be Sister Charlie and the Diana. She won it by 2.5 lengths over Rushing Fall.
How did you think she performed last year, and really a huge effort?
I'd agree with you. I mean, she's run some great races. You're talking about a horse that has won Grade 1s four straight years. And they tell me that there's only three fillies have ever done it. So she's in very rare company. But one of her best races, if not the best, might have been in defeat last year. It was a super race. And, you know, she looks a lot bigger and stronger this year. I think she's more prepared to get the mile and eighth this year. As an older horse, I've seen other great mares I've trained get a little extra distance as they've gotten older. And she fits that bill, I think.
She's five now. We're going to bring up footage of the Jenny Wiley. Before, earlier in her career, she was much more, I don't want to say a runoff, but she was on the lead in most of her races. At five now, you said she's more mature as she's found a little bit of a rating gear, which probably is going to help getting nine furlongs too.
Absolutely. I think it's a great point. She has. She's rated a lot kinder as she's gotten older. And just physically, she's always been a good-looking horse, but she's just as big and strong and carrying as much condition as I've ever seen with her. And the pace of her work leads me to believe that she'll run a little longer this year.
I had a conversation after she won the Wiley with our friend John Panagot, who's Javier's jockey agent, and we were talking, and it's tough to use the word underrated on a Breeders' Cup winner, and as you mentioned, she's a five-time Grade 1 winner. But with, you know, champions in the barn, does she not get the just due that maybe... You know, let's say she was the only horse you had, or what? I mean, I think people would. I said to John, I said, "This horse might be a Hall of Famer one day."
Yeah.
And I don't know if she gets that recognition.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, in our barn, she does.
Right.
But I hear what you're saying, and you know, sometimes you can get a little overshadowed. I mean, it could be the distance she runs at as well. She hasn't run those classic distances, and then when you run the middle distances as a female, you really have to beat the boys like Uni.
Yeah.
So you get caught in the middle there, and I think that's where some of that maybe underappreciation lies. But, you know, I did bring up the fact that she's one of only three fillies that's won the Grade 1s four straight years, and I think that's going to carry a long way with her legacy when she's done racing.
Yeah, for sure. Beholder is, I know, one of the others, and she's
Lady Eli.
Yeah, Lady Eli, there you go. You would know that one, too. So another Diana winner for you. Quickly, before I let you go, as we taped this, you had got to the lead in the trainer standings. Clearly, it would be great to win. You've won it many times before. Is it more... Maybe something, do you think about it? Is it more something we kind of hit on to get people interested? Or is it something that's cognizant in your mind?
It's important on both sides. I really appreciate the interest in it locally, being from here. We have so many fans and everyone involved with our stable. And certainly for our staff, they're very competitive. You know, we set the bar high every year in a lot of areas of you know, between how many stakes we can win and the prize money we make and horses we can develop. And the Saratoga standings is one of those things every year. And I appreciate and admire my staff for being so competitive over that. It's something we look at. No, it's not going to make or break our year, but it's a lot of fun. It's a little different this year, not having the fans really involved at the track. But nevertheless, we're still competitive in looking at that, and hopefully we can get it done.
Yeah, as a local guy, you said you grew up right down the road in Mechanicville. The vibe in 2020, I'm sure, is not like anything you've ever experienced before. How has it been, at least as a training standpoint? Have you had to alter your schedule or do anything out of the norm, or is it kind of business as usual?
Now that we're in the meet, middle of the meet here, it's business as usual. But early on in the year, there were so many adjustments to make, and I know that I share that with in any businesses,
yeah.
Really, any business owners or anybody individually. It's just everyone had to adjust this year. We're no different. So, you know, there's plenty of horses that had their schedules altered, and we were able to make the adjustments necessary to get going, and we feel fortunate that we're here. I know there's a lot of people who aren't as fortunate. Their businesses aren't up and running yet, so but you know, I feel for them. But for us, we're getting back to normal every day.
Great to hear. Chad Brown, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know it's a busy time for you. Good luck in the four-star, Dave. Good luck in the Diana.
Yeah, thanks for having me, always.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Thank you. I think what you guys are doing is awesome.
Seth, you do a great job too, so thank you, and I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate watching your show every day.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Atto with you, four-star Dave Day here at Saratoga. And then tomorrow, of course, the grade one Diana for the Phillies and Mares. And that was great with Chad Brown. Special thanks to our buddy back in the booth there, Mick Richards, for setting that up and doing what he does, editing and all the great video work that he's done for us over the years and certainly for me up here and putting together those pieces that Gary Contessa has done as well. And Mick did a great job with that Christophe Clement video last week that I was able to show that Gary put together and then getting over there and filming Chad yesterday. And I thought Chad was very candid yesterday. I thought it was really gave a good, honest assessment about his horses both today in the four-star Dave and then tomorrow in the Diana with Sister Charlie. And listen, she's got to step up tomorrow. She got her comeback out of the way, and she lost on the square to Starship Jubilee and Call Me Love. So she's got to put up tomorrow as she goes for a third straight Diana. And then certainly Russian Fall, who, you know, I said it to Chad, and I've talked to some friends, and like I mentioned to Chad, John Panagot, Javier Castellanos, jockey agent. Javier's ridden her, you know, her entire career. I said somehow some way, this Breeders' Cup winner, this five-time Grade One Stakes winner, this course record holder, she kind of gets overlooked a little bit in the fact that she wasn't a champion. You know, I voted for her as two-year-old filly champion when she won the Breeders' Cup. I thought she deserved it. She didn't get it. And then, of course, Chad had Sister Charlie in 2018 and Uni last year. So, you know, it's the riches that Chad has, and here's Rushing Fall. That, you know, at the end of the day, Rushing Fall might be in the Hall of Fame one of these, you know, at some point. If she wins a Diana and goes on and does different things, she's right there. She's got a resume that puts her right there. So the Diana, if you haven't seen it, it's Sunday. It's not in a normal spot. Typically, it's a Saturday showcase race at Saratoga, but it's Sunday. And they got six of them. I mentioned Call Me Love. Graham Motion's got a couple. Secret Message, Mean Mary, who's streaking right now for Graham. She cuts back and will try to get 9 furlongs and a Grade One win. I mentioned Chad with Rushing Fall and Sister Charlie. And I'm happy to be joined by my next guest here on Saturdays at the Spa. I'm going to bring in Kevin Attard, who's going to saddle Starship Jubilee, who, you know, you can make a case she's the one to beat in the Diana. Kevin, welcome in. I know you're up at Woodbine, up north at Woodbine, and this day and age we are, you can't get down here. But thanks so much for taking the time and joining me on this big weekend.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on today.
Starship Jubilee. I you know, I mentioned she won on the square in the Boston Spa, beating Call Me Love, who's back for more, and then certainly Sister Charlie. But I guess we'll go back to 2017, where it all kind of began, and you and the family claimed her for $16,000, and here you are, a 8-time graded stakes winner, more than $1.6 million in the bank now. Kevin, talk a little bit about going back in time when you said, you know, you put in the claim for $16,000 on Starship Jubilee. I certainly, this is, couldn't have thought that in your wildest dreams you would be here. But what were you know, thinking you were getting at that point when you reached in for 16 and the type of horse she was back then?
Yeah, obviously she's become a real Cinderella story in the sense, I mean, when you're claiming horses, you can never, ever predict that they're going to turn out the way she has. At the moment, we were just looking for just a competitive horse, maybe to bring back to Woodbine and compete here at Woodbine locally. So I liked her form. She had just kind of run twice beyond 5/8, and it seemed like she was looking to get a little bit more ground. So I thought, you know, this filly, maybe with some added distance, there might be a little bit more to her. So anyways, you know, we had got an outshook for a lot of horses down there, and her form came across the desk, and it looked good, and we were enticed by it, and went and had a look at her. You know what I mean, not a very big filly, but you know what I mean, well put together, and her numbers were decent enough, so I figured, you know what, for 16 we can't get hurt too badly, so let's take a shot.
Kevin, when so like you said, you took a shot for $16,000, at what point did it, maybe the light bulb went on with her, or did she adapt to your program? At what point did you kind of say, wow, we have something here?
Well, you know, I mean, she rattled off 3 wins off in a row at Gulfstream right off the claim. And, you know, I mean, she was running quick against, you know, I mean, restricted company, Florida Breds once, and then the other then, and a starter. So, I mean, she hadn't really been tested, but, you know, I mean, we were obviously at that point, you know, I mean, 3 wins, she owed it, you know, what I mean, owed nobody anything at that point. And we had brought her back to Woodbine, and we were kind of stuck. It's May. For turf racing in May, you've got very limited options up north, right? So the only thing that was really coming up was a stake. And, you know what I mean, it was either that or kind of maybe wait another month for a two other than to kind of show up. So I said to my partner at the time, I said, you know what, I'm going to give her a shot in this race. We've got nothing to lose. I mean, if by any chance, it looked like it was going to be a small field. I said, if we could get maybe a little black type on her, who knows, maybe she might be worth something down the road. And sure enough, you know, she steps up and wins the Nassau that spring.
Yeah, and then, you know, won the Nassau, and that started, as I mentioned, she's ultimately got 8 graded stakes wins, but, you know, she was winning grade 2s and grade 3s, maybe couldn't necessarily get over the grade one hump, and then you run in the EP Taylor, which, you know, if the people watching aren't familiar, that is the preeminent, filly and mare turf race up there. We're going to bring up the entire race, and she's stalking outside in the two path. Kevin, she's kind of a horse that makes her own trip. She's got a high cruising speed, tactical speed. You'll see her. She's going to be on the outside stalking. Talk as a Woodbine guy. You've been training for, you know, two decades now, winning the EP Taylor with a horse that you claim for $16,000 had to be a real proud moment for you and the team.
Yeah, definitely. The EP Taylor has a very history background to it. There's been a lot of great mares that have won the EP Taylor and gone on to be successful producers. So, you know, for her to win that race, it was a very special moment. My first grade one win as well. We had tried the year before. I mean, a mile and a quarter is probably just a little bit beyond her best. So she had just kind of put it all together that day, and Contreras gave her a brilliant ride. She's very versatile in her running style, which makes her, I think, that much tougher to compete with. And she just kind of kicked clear and held the rest at the bay.
You mentioned the mile and a quarter, and especially over this Woodbine turf course, that's a demanding trip. You came up a little short the year before. Was this this had to be quite a big hurdle that she passed and just gives you now, I know this was last year, but even more options, because up to this point, like you said, maybe 9 furlongs was her best trip. The fact she could get 10 furlongs over this turf course shows a lot about her.
Yeah, definitely. Running a mile and a quarter at Woodbine, you've got a long stretch run. So, and usually a horse with her kind of turn of foot, sometimes you can get a little leg weary deep down in the stretch, so it's a little tougher. But she's just all hard. She never disappoints. She comes out each and every time, with gallant efforts, and just been a pleasure to train and be a part of.
So after the EP Taylor, ran second at Churchill Downs in the Cardinal, that broke her three race winning streak. But now she comes back in 2020. You found a soft spot against Florida Breds, as you mentioned. She is a Florida Bred, so she could get that Sunshine Millions out of the way, and never a bad thing to be running for $150,000 at 2-5. Before we get into further into her campaign, I know with the COVID and all that in the world we're living in, you had a little issue down in Florida, right? I know you were a little worried when the regulations and restrictions came out if you were going to make it back. You winter in Florida at Gulfstream, and you have horses in Ocala. Talk a little bit about your trek getting back to Woodbine, which was not a foregone conclusion at the time, correct?
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Definitely. At the time, COVID was kind of starting to hit. The Canadian government, set a deadline to tell Canadian citizens to kind of, urge them to get back home as quickly as possible. Then there was an issue of whether the trucks, obviously the vans, were going to be able to kind of bring the horses back and forth. We had the best of our stock really basically in Florida, whether at Gulfstream or in Ocala. And obviously some of the Canadian help that comes down with me. So, you can't leave the horses stranded. So we're waiting with them, and at the same token, trying to make plans to get back home and make sure we get back home possibly before a complete shutdown of the border. Unprecedented times, and not sure what's going to possibly happen. There is a little kind of fear, and you just feel safer at home. Obviously, if something kind of went wrong and one of us got sick, it's just nicer to know you're back home in your own country.
Sure.
Getting medical care. Obviously, in Canada, we're fortunate enough to have medical care kind of covered for us. So in the States, who knows if the insurance would have covered it at that time. So there are a lot of, concerns, and even just kind of getting the horses back home was a concern.
She was able to win a couple more graded stakes at Gulfstream and then at Tampa. Kevin, I know we're going to bring up footage the entire race of the Boston Spa, which was kind of a funky race with, a loose leader that was way out there. You were stalking in third, showing another kind of new dimension because she was taken out of her element a little bit that day with kind of a weirdly run race. Kevin, I know she won the E.P. Taylor, and that was a grade one race, and, you know, that was her first grade one win. In the Boston Spa, I say only, it was only a grade two race. But, boy, she really stepped up, Kevin. And I think, you know, as big as some of her other races were, would you agree this was really the one that, that really legitimized her, because she's beating a champion in Sister Charlie, and Call Me Love for Christoph is a nice graded stakes filly too, doing it on the at, on the big screen at Saratoga?
Definitely. I think it gives her, a little bit more respect than she deserves. She's kind of been flying under the radar a bit. You mentioned it, Sister Charlie, a champion. Obviously, we were hooking her at a distance that's not her best, coming off of a layoff. So, I thought we might hold a little bit of an upper advantage over her, but at the same token, she's just a quality filly, and Chad Brown's notorious for having them ready off the bench. So you knew she was going to come prepared. But when she ran that, she always had better positioning than Sister Charlie, and Clement's filly, she dug in deep down the stretch and kind of held her at bay. So it was definitely her strongest race, and almost like her coming out party.
And such is racing at Saratoga. On to the next one, and you've got to answer the bell again. I mean, this is if the Boston Spa was tough, this is much tougher with a capital T. I mean, Sister Charlie, as you mentioned, is going to be second off the layoff at a trip that's better for her. She's won this race twice. Here's Rushing Fall. I mentioned a Breeders' Cup winner, a five-time Grade 1 winner. Mean Mary is streaking for Grand Motion. Call Me Love is back again. Kevin, in the interim, I know she came back home to you at Woodbine. How has she trained since the Boston Spa? And how do you balance, such a big race last time and to have to come right back and do it again at 9 furlongs in the Grade 1 Diana?
Yeah, so she's trained really well in the interim. I've been really happy. We had an option to run here last weekend at a mile and a quarter, ran it right in our backyard. But I elected with the extra week, and I thought the mile and eighth, to me, is her best distance, that I was willing to kind of take the risk and ship her back to Saratoga. She's obviously run well over that course. Knowing that Mean Mary, Rushing Fall, obviously kind of going to join the fray along with Sister Charlie, Call Me Love again. It's still kind of, happy enough that she's trained well, worked well in the interim, that I think we're up to the challenge.
Kevin, I'm sure you've looked at this race on paper. On paper, you mentioned her tactical speed. She's always going to be in front of Sister Charlie, and that gives her a big edge. If you handicap this race on paper, you kind of have to fall into a pretty nice trip, I would think, right? I mean, Rushing Fall's got a lot of speed. Certainly Mean Mary hasn't been behind horses since she got on her tear. You look at this on paper, Kevin, I would think you're going to sit a pretty nice trip in here off the speed.
Yeah, definitely on paper. I think we can work out a great trip. So it's going to be up to Jose now from that point. So hopefully, Mean Mary and Rushing Fall hook early, and I think, I see us kind of sitting in that pocket behind them. I think Call Me Love will be very kind of forwardly placed as well. So, I expect to get a good trip, small field, shouldn't be too much traffic. Hopefully we get, early run on Sister Charlie again, and we're just good enough to run them all down.
Kevin, you mentioned Jose Ortiz. He's going to get aboard today. You lose Javier to Rushing Fall. Jose's a world-class rider. We all know that. But is Starship Jubilee, she's 7 years old. She's run 36 times. I would think a consummate professional. Any concern about a new jock getting aboard today?
No, I think when you look at the jockey calling me there and, the choices that you have, those guys are very capable. She's tactical. She can be a little headstrong sometimes early, but I have the utmost confidence in Jose. I think he'll suit her well, and the two of them should get along fine.
Kevin, I know just we always like to play the where do you go from here game, and certainly you want to, after the Diana, you'll know a lot more. Do you have a path picked out? Is the EP Taylor the bullseye again? How do you navigate the rest of the campaign if all things work out?
Yeah, honestly, I don't have anything really kind of etched in stone yet. You know, there are some options. Obviously, the E.P. Taylor's one, like you mentioned. But I want to see her run against these horses first, see how she stacks up. Obviously, if she runs a big race, then the Breeders' Cup's going to be on our mind, and that's a big target that we're hoping to kind of get to right now. So we're going to just watch her run tomorrow. Hopefully, you know, she runs to expectations, and if that's the case, then I think the November race obviously is going to be what we're going to be aiming for, and maybe trying to find another start between that now and then.
Great. Well, Kevin, listen, I want to thank you so much for taking the time this morning. Good luck tomorrow in the Diana with Starship Jubilee, who's just really, you know, one of those rags to riches kind of stories, and great job managing her and what she's turned into off a $16,000 claim.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's been real special. You know, I just feel really lucky to be part of her. And, you know, it's these horses are once in a lifetime. So, I mean, it's just been a wonderful story.
Absolutely. Well, best of luck going forward tomorrow, certainly into Diana and down the road. Kevin, thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
That was Kevin Attard with Starship Jubilee tomorrow in the Grade 1 Diana. And, you know, Anthony and I talked about it on the Handicappers Report. The Diana is such a cornerstone race. And, you know, when Saratoga, when you run the Travers and you run the Whitney and you run all those kinds of races, sometimes, you know, a few of them might fall through the cracks. But the Diana, as Anthony, you know, read off the list, the who's who of who's won the Diana in the past. And tomorrow's renewal is just so good. I say only six horses, but, you know, they all could win. Even Graham's Secret Message is, you know, is a Grade 1 kind of filly on her best day. So there's six of them. Starship Jubilee, just the type of horse we all like to root for. I mean, $16,000 claim, has gone on to win eight graded stakes races, over $1.5 million. So she is going to hit very hard in the Diana as Sister Charlie goes for three in a row. Rushing Fall, I'll tell you what, if Rushing Fall gets this one, as a Breeders' Cup champion, as a horse who would be the clubhouse leader for the divisional honors right now, she is putting together a resume that might get her across the street on Union Avenue in the Hall of Fame. So there's a lot to look forward to tomorrow. There's a lot to look forward to today in the four-star Dave, the Grade 1. Chad Brown's got four of them. Bill Mott's got a couple. Just a great weekend at Saratoga. Hopefully the weather's going to cooperate. We had that crazy storm earlier. Blue skies as I look out from our little bunker here. Off the turf early, but the four-star Dave later in the card. So that's going to wrap it. Again, special thanks to David Aragona at the start. Chad Brown yesterday at the barn. That was great. And then just now, Kevin Attard with Starship Jubilee from up at Woodbine. So a special thanks to those three guys back in the booth and everybody that makes it happen. Mick, Brian, Danny, everybody back at home base. Dino, special thanks to all of them. We can't do this without them. So that's going to wrap it up. Saturdays at the Spa. Two more left. My goodness. I'm going to be at the Saratoga Prime tomorrow. For a bankroll. So if you're in town, you want to do that, stop over. And then I will see you Thursday. But best of luck on a Grade 1 weekend here at Saratoga.
You've been watching Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Nadeau. Saturdays at the Spa has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.